Julia needs to unmute. She needs to unmute.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just move forward since Laura's here. So let's start our meeting. This is the limited meeting. And I think we'll just, if anybody has any questions, normally we're supposed to do board introductions, but since there's four of us here and I think everybody here knows everybody, we'll just move on into presentation for Otsego Monument Works. Go ahead, Laura.
Okay, now I'm going to try this. This is a share screen without Chandra here. I'm not sure, so let's see what happens. Host is disabled participant screen sharing. Uh-oh. That's something that Chandra would have set up. Julia, can you hear me? Can you fix the, I'm trying to share the screen now and it's disabled. I need to have it enabled by the host, and you're the host today. Yes, you are. Okay, we can't hear you. Julia, we can't hear you because you're on mute. Please unmute.
I believe in chat, she said she's looking. Okay. And to please bear with her, she doesn't have audio.
Okay, we'll just have to wait for a minute then, because I can do mine, I think. But I also gave one, I gave one to Chandra, as a backup. I'm learning how to use something as a share screen. So we need the middle people to fix it.
You got it?
Okay, yeah, I think so. Let's see if I've done it right, because I've got to, hang on just a second.
Yay.
Okay, but that, let's see. Okay, can you all see the whole thing?
Yeah, we can see it.
Does it have the side panel too? Or just the main center part where I'm circling?
We can see two separate panels. One says Otsego Monument Works, and then the other one has more text on it.
And I don't, that's the one coming up. I don't know how to disable that. So we better just try for the one that I have. Okay. First of all, thank you all for being here. And this is not one of my Honoka'a town projects, but it's one that I've been very actively following for a number of years. And the reason why I did not have it on the agenda in the previous times is because there were always so many nominations that were before you folks. And I wanted to wait for a time when there were fewer nominations so I could give an explanation. So this is what we have at the Otsego Monument Works. It's a little bit unusual because usually you have to check one box or the other, but it really is a site, and that is what I'm advocating, the Otsego Monument Works. But within that site is a structure,
Laura,
which is a, yes, huh?
Could I just, before you get started, could you just summarize the past presentations you've made? I can't remember if it's once or twice you've brought this before the board previously.
It was once, and at that time, George Kaysen suggested something about archaeology, which by all accounts was not appropriate. And then you, Matt, had said you hadn't studied it thoroughly at that time. It's not really archaeology. It's about history and events is what it is. So although I include lots of things that have archaeological background, but that's history. So does that answer your question, Matt?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, so in the course of time, I added in the actual big document, I've added lots of things, which are the, if you want to call them, the genealogical charts, and a lot more history, and finding out the name of Abigaila, Ellen Pony Kamakau. And also, I put an ad in the OHA newsletter And I got a number of people weighing in that they were somehow related. Most people didn't have a very long history back to their grandfather's times, but the two people that, one I know personally and the other one I've met now is Yukalin Aluli, a lawyer here in town. And the other one is Jeffrey Lyons, who I think he's here in town, but I'm not sure. Anyway, they both have long family ties and they can point right back to that genealogy chart, and you can see that they're connected. So I thought that was kind of, these are things that you find out along the way, and in a historical research, there's still probably more to do to go over to Maui and investigate what the actual places were, but that's not possible right now. And then finally, the artifacts and the objects are the two Hawaiian headstones that were saved and have been placed now at the Mo'ili'ili Japanese Cemetery. So, stop me if you have more questions, Matt, please. Oops, let's see. Okay, so I did this chart so it would make it a little bit easier. The actual framing for the nomination is the Otsubo Monument Works. And in that, I have all the property transfers and Mr. Otsubo's work, his major works, which are quite extensive, the carving at Founders Gates and the Hiok Monument and the Bamboo Ridge Monument, but many stones he carved in the Mo'ili'ili Japanese Cemetery and elsewhere also. So that's the center part, and that's their property, and that's where the discoveries of the structure and the artifacts were found. So this up here on the left, can you see my little cursor going around? I hope you can.
Yes.
Okay, that shows the origins of the Kamakau and Kepuakai families. They was on Maui, and Keopapa is the smaller ili, within Pipahulu. Kahuna is where the Kamakau family moved, and Kahikuna is a lower punch bowl. If you think of Queen Emma Street and the Royal School, that's where it is now. And it was a place of more means for the Hawaiians that were maybe had skilled work or in the case lawyer or some other notables. And then after much investigation, it's 99% sure that the Roman camp, without having an underground radar of some sort to check if there's remains, the Roman Catholic cemetery, it's the bluestone enclosure and the pedestal stones, which I'm going to show you. So that's right there on King Street. Then after the discovery on the Otsubo Monument Works, I moved them to the Mo'ili'ili Japanese Cemetery where they are today. So if you have questions, that it's radiating out from the central Monument Works, and that's criterion A. So I want to read some of the definitions that come from the National Park Service Bulletin, and these are what are very necessary for us when we do our nominations. So it says, place where the historic property was constructed, or the place where the historic event occurred. The combination of elements that create the form, plan, space, structure, and style of a property. The physical environment of a historical property. Setting includes elements such as topographic features, open space, view shed, landscape, vegetation, and artificial features. You can see it's quite a wide range. The physical elements that were combined or deposited during a particular period of time and in a particular pattern or configuration to form a historic property. The physical evidence of the labor and skill of a particular culture or people during any given period in history. A property's expression of the aesthetic or historic sense of a particular period in time. So these are all the givens that are there in the bulletin, and those of us who do the nominations endeavor to put all of that in play. And here, this is another one also from the bulletin 16. They are places that are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, or that are associated with the lives of persons significant in our past, or that have yielded or may be likely to yield important information in prehistory or history. And I put down at the bottom four different sites that are more unusual. You folks on the board deal mostly with residences and maybe some commercial buildings, but all of these four here are very different kinds of sites, and yet they've all been passed by the SHPD board. So if you remember that the Two Brothers shipwreck, that was Susan Lebo, the head archaeologist, talked about that, of which the remains, of course, are not disclosed. The Cocoa Palms, which you reviewed, which I believe are going to be torn down, and that requires another document that they have to file with SHPD. And the other two, Honolulu'ulu, precede me, and Koholawe, but I believe there's the Honolulu'ulu are just are ditches and pavements, and Koholawe, I'm not sure what artifacts they found. Anyway, that's just to let you know that these are the, that the, it's wider than just residences or commercial buildings. And then to go over that again, I don't need to. And just to let you know where was the Otsubo Monument Works on Oahu, it's there. And that's, this is right in this area here. It's a little too small to see on the screen. And just to show the relationship of the Otsubo Monument Works and cemetery where the two Hawaiian headstones now reside. And this is, again, it's very small, but it's the designated area that's in here that is the site and the structure and the artifacts. And right here by the queue, whoops, gosh, it's so small, right in here. Sorry, I would like to get it bigger on my screen, but I don't know how to. Anyway, that's right where the monuments were. This is the karst and some fill. And so it's not a real good growing area. Agriculturally speaking, it's not very good. There are ponds and there were lotus ponds and some rice growing, but not particularly good for lo'i. Oh, here's a closer one right here. That's the site right there. This is the Mo'ili'i, the sugar loaf flow, and that's the lava from Pu'ukakea. What was that? Question? Okay, yeah. And then the cemetery where it resides now is on the lava rock. And this is the Land Commission awards with the Ilis. It's basically all within the larger Ahupua'a of Waikiki. So this is the place here, and here's the cemetery that's over here. And then again, also on the Bulletin 16, the National Park Service overarching goals, the first is to state in chronological order and local regional context. I usually handle that by doing timelines. And that's usually in the addendum section. The second is to reconstruct past life ways, including the ways that people made a living, and the ways they used the landscape. I think that's definitely Mr. Otsubo and his profession, as well as much as I was able to put together with the Ke Poi Kai and the Kamakau families. The third is to achieve some understanding of how and why human societies have changed through time. And it's a story of Hawaiians on the land with the later Japanese Americans enterprising, as well as many other ethnic groups enterprising also, and beginning to own property, so forth. Okay, this is, these are pictures of the Otsubo stoneworks. You can see the stones here. This is his tool area, or something he was putting in the toolbox area. That is actually a well that's there. And there's the well right there. Yeah. And then this is the front gate, boys' day. They had two boys. And my friend Harriet Natsuyama is the oldest girl. And this is their plantation style house. And then the great story is that one day Harriet called me up and she said, we found a headstone. We don't know what to do, because the contractor was digging to put in a grease trap for the restaurant that's down below. And so everything stopped. And we were careful to just put things back in order the way they were. We don't know if this was broken by the excavator or not, but this is the way it is. And at this point, let's see, I should, okay, maybe I'll get to it in a minute. But anyway, Susan Lebo, thank goodness for Ron, Ross Stevenson, who worked at Shipti for 5 years, but knows Susan Lebo very well, the head archaeologist. She came over, she investigated everything, and she determined there were no remains that we could go ahead with the excavation. The contractor would not allow me to dig under this area under here because he said it would compromise the slab. So even though I could see two headstones, I could not remove them. I could see far enough in for this one, but I could not see other than a little corner of this one, which is just a blank stone for whatever reason. Now, how did they get there? They got there because some salvage or junk dealers were collecting headstones that had fallen or been broken or whatever. And that Mr. Otsubo, wanting to have a smooth pavement to wheel his very heavy stones around on, and the heavy equipment, the anvils and the stone carving equipment, he put in this pavement, and the structure is just a support for that pavement also. They, well, maybe I'll get to that, the headstone three in a minute. Montejuro died in the 1800s. He was the first Japanese to be buried on Oahu, we believe. And I was able to capture this, and I looked up the, I have my friend who's the great translator linguist, Joel Bradshaw, and he translated, and he says, wait a minute, this is at the Makiki Cemetery. So what has happened? And this stone was put up prior to about 27, when probably Mr. Otsubo acquired it, and it had either broken or for some reason had to be remade. So the one at the new one at the Makiki Cemetery is thinner and less substantial than the original one from the 1800s, or at that about the 1800s, we guess. So that one was only a partial one, and the two headstones are the Hawaiian headstones. So here they are as they come out of the ground, and the marks are just where there were metal objects in the ground. And to give you an idea of how the stones have adaptive reuse, for one thing, I can remember my days at art department. There were big loads of headstones that came in for these sculpture people to recarve. These are largely limestone and marble. But they were clearly designed to be reused, and I'm not sure where they came from at all. But this is an example of one that was used, turned face down, and was used as a stepping stone. This is the Apana Church here, a chapel in Mai Mai Cemetery. So this is, while it's not related to my studies, it's related to the ways in which the stones were done in adaptive reuse. And by the way, if you have questions, do ask right now. I can get, you know, I've tried to single, you know, not too much of the more technical research things that I've undertaken, but the stone types are usually, we call them headstones, and then types of pedestals and mounting, and different types of mounting to the pedestals. There's variations on them, and I do cover that in the longer document. And why the stone pedestal attachments failed. In both cases with these marble stones, they're extremely heavy, and they had just very small little pins that were placed in below and then fitted to the pedestal stone. And any high wind or anybody even pushing or leaning against them would probably cause them to fail. So that's probably, they were probably for some period of time, they were in the Roman Catholic cemetery. And then whether the person in charge of it or not, did the changes and put them into a salvage or a junk dealership, that we will probably not find out. And then the types of characteristics, the tympanum, that's the top part, they're distinct from any other stones carved in all the cemeteries we went to. Types of engraving, there's relief carving, which is actually more difficult because you leave the lettering exposed, and then there's engraved carving. Types of messages, and the death date on the stones. So here's the filigree engraving on the tympanum, and the type of typeface, Caslon, I believe. It's as close as I can get to it. And a very interesting tympanum, the shape. I did not see the shape in any of the other cemeteries. And so these are some of the, these are the cemeteries. I took Harriet Natsuyama with me. So we would be seeing if there were any things that looked like her grandfather's stone carving or not. We didn't really find, we found a few in other cemeteries, but generally speaking, it was the Mo'ili'ili Japanese cemetery that he was known for. But the, but here's the Roman Catholic cemetery, which is the main cemetery where the I believe, like I said, I'm 99% sure that that's where they came from. And I think I prove it pretty well. Just to show you the different types, I'm not going to linger on these, but you can see on your own these. And then this is the Julia Kamakau, who must have been either a very younger sister or maybe a niece or grandchild of someone. But at any rate, she passed away. My guess is with this type of ornamentation, she might have been a scholar, you know, somebody who is gifted in writing or languages or something. And this this is the compound right around here. There once was a tree, and I don't, the cross does not have any markers on it. And then there's a place where there is a statue, which is missing, but it's probably, maybe can be found. And then here are the two pedestal stones right here that that the Hawaiian stones would have been on top of. And I did measurements of the existing pedestal stones. This represents a second pedestal stone, and that's where the pins would have been mounted on the second pedestal stone. Those were not extant, they're not available. And back to here, this is again. And so this is, you can see them in the Mo'ili'ili Japanese Cemetery. And just to give you a little bit on Maui, this is Kaupapa, Kaupapa rather, and their land holdings were Ali'i Land Commission awards were right in this area here. And when after Samuel Kamakau, who's our very noteworthy historian, he left the Hainaluna school where he had probably been in close contact with Ke Poi Kai because they were related, because Kamakau's wife was a sister of Ke Poi Kai's forebearer. And so Kamakau was either assigned or he went to Kipahulu, which is right where the whole neighborhood of the family compounds were. And he taught school and was principal there. And he probably, we're not sure if he was a Congregationalist and then he switched to being a Roman Catholic. So I'm not sure where he spent his time tithing or giving a tribute to both the churches there. And then this, when they moved to from Kipahulu to Kahehuna, this is a place that's not generally known. Most of these neighborhoods are not known anymore, but this is Lower Punchbowl basically. And here's Queen's Hospital to give you, to orient you. And then there's the Royal School is, where is the Royal School? Well, anyway, Royal School is right here. And there also happens to be a heiau here, which was in the times of the march, ultimately to the Pali and earlier times. This is a place of people with more means that were largely Hawaiian families, and I can find the exact addresses. This is an example of the Land Commission Awards in the Kahuhina. Well, anyway, the neighborhood. And so these are marking the ones that I found. Here's Royal School and everything else. In other words, it shows you quite a cluster of people. This is not the people that came into the Chinatown area, which is over this way, or the Fort area, or the up here in Kukui area. And this is another, this is a Sanborn map, and you can see this is the cluster, and this is where the Kamakau family would have lived. And just to show you these, the two again, and this is as them as have they been restored. And then just to read this along with me, please, the Otsubo Monument Works meets the registration requirements. Again, this is a requirement of the Bulletin 16, set forth in the submission, Kapa'akea Ili, Waikiki Ahupua'a, Kona District, Oahu Island. And then I put in parenthesis Mo'ili'ili because that is rarely claimed on Land Commission awards, but it nevertheless is the place that people would say they were from. usually in the Land Commission awards, people only refer to their neighbors on either any side of their small properties. And then if a Konohiki was overseeing, they would refer to that person also. And then the Otsobu Monument Works is significant at the level, local level, under Criterion A, History and Events. And that's the only one that I am requesting your passage of, serving as an incubator for the entrepreneurial dreams of Japanese immigrants to find employment off the plantations and establish their own enterprises and improve their economic status. Under Criterion A, History and Events, the Otsubo Monument Works is significant at the local level under Criterion A for the discovered events and history associated with the site. And then the period of significance ranges from the purchase of the site in 1920 through 24, that was the end, December, January, that's why the unclear date there, to the death of its owner, Sentaro Otsubo. And then the Monument Works is eligible for Hawaii and the National Registers of Historic Places at the local level under Criterion A due to its continuous significance in small town commerce and its discovery of events and history associated with the site. And here are the artifacts again. Okay, I am open to questions if you have any. Thank you very much.
Laura, during the past discussion we had, you had this originally listed for criteria A and D. I think the discussion was that, you know, it is an archaeological site and that you should get some input from the archaeological branch on how this should be treated. As far as I know, I talked to Susan Lebo, I talked to Julia, this current version, which is only under criteria A, has not been reviewed by SHPD.
Well, no, it has been. I mean, you are doing the reviewing now, and that's why you see the soil samples. That's why you see the analysis of the lay of the land with the elevations at each place. I list a whole range of archaeological criteria, and the ones that were appropriate, I included in this document under history and events.
But this is a modification of the one you submitted back in November of 2018, right?
The first one I submitted, yes, this is a modification because it was unclear from George Kaysen and yourself that where it would belong. And it's basically the best place is a site with ancillary or associated sites and histories. And the archaeology would be folded into it. And I talked to Susan Lebo also about this.
I believe that our process is that before we review documents and make a determination on them, they go to SHPD for review. And I don't believe this document, this current version, has been reviewed by SHPD.
No, they have been. It has been. Yeah, I mean, it's been sent in. I'm frankly have to tell you the intake, when I don't hear responses back, I assume that everything's fine.
Well, I spoke to Dr. Lebo and she spoke to Julia and they both confirmed that this has not been reviewed by SHPD.
Then there's
I know that's not your fault, but I'm just telling you that's the way it is.
Well, it's something that's within the intake, which because people were working from home and they didn't have computer capacity or something might have happened along the way. But I don't think it would stop, you know, you folks reviewing this. I think if Susan wanted to, Dr. Lebo wanted to review it, she was there, she was on the site, she knows, and what would be included are all the other findings that I had subsequent to her archaeological excavation of the site.
Okay, I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Anybody else have questions?
Okay, thank you, Laura.
I was going to say it's a great research. It's a great find. It's a great discovery, and finding people who really were, descendants, and it's just such a wonderful thing to have them honored again. And they were very notables in their community. Okay, now I don't know how to get out of this.
Thank you, Laura. Should be at the top of your screen. Should when you move your cursor
sharing your screen sharing stop share. Okay, let's see if I can back. Okay.
Good job.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. I know that was a lot of research for you. Yeah. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. Are there other people coming in to discuss their?
Yeah. I was going to say that the next one on the schedule is the 2470 Oahu residents, which is Minato Ishii. So I just wanted to see if anyone is here yet from Minato Ishii to talk about that.
I had a question. It had been determined at previous SHPD board meetings that the name, the most prominent name of the residents would be put on the nomination. So it carries the other, the second one carries, you know, the John and Mabel Dyer Beach Cottage, but this one does not carry the name, whether it's a contemporary name or a historic name. I think that was the decision that the board had made at earlier time.
Yeah, we can discuss that with them maybe tomorrow. Let's see, it doesn't look like anybody is here.
Don's here.
Sorry?
I know.
Yeah, Don's here. Yeah. So if nobody is here to discuss 2470 Oahu residents, just wanted to make sure, then we'll just move on with the John and Mabel Dyer Beach Cottage. It's Don. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. Okay. Can we get the, let me pull up the thing to share with you. Okay, so I'm presenting today the John and Mabel Dyer Beach Cottage. It's out on Crozier Drive in Mokulehia. It was built in 1933. The tsunami in 1946 destroyed the ocean side of the structure, and that was rebuilt in 1950. There is no architect for the building. It was done by Walter Tanabe, who was a local contractor, and Wilfred Desjarlais, who was Mrs. Dyer's brother. They're the ones who built the house. Next picture. Where? Oh, yes. Okay, good. Okay. Here's the street view of the property. A fence is in front, and then this is the garage for the house, which is part of the nomination. It has a new door, but the rest of the garage is original. Here you can see it has horizontal lap siding on top. The rest of it is all vertical planks and TNG. Very simple truss system inside with a toucan roof and a single wall with the 2x4s structurally visible. The house itself, you go in through the gate right here, and then you walk down a sidewalk to the main house. The structure on the right is the garage. And they also have an open lanai over on this side, which is also part of the original structure. The house is essentially a gable roof, and on off each side is shed roof wings. The lanai is a simple structure sitting on tofu blocks with pipe columns and the toton roof. Here you can see a view of it looking towards the house. It also has this concrete floor, which has these geometric shapes and sized and colored in it. The lanai is here. Here's the main house. There's also this little structure, which is essentially a concrete hibachi. Here you can get a better view of that. Like I said, the house itself is horizontal lap siding. Here's an, I think a lot of the material that is used in the house was probably salvaged from other things because the house is built in 33, but this five panel door, I'm sure, is quite older than 1933. The jalousie windows, I don't think were original, but were probably added in the 50s or the 60s, so they become historic in their own right. And on the inside, behind this door right here, as a matter of fact, you can see in the picture, you can see straight through the house, is one large room, which serves as the living room, dining room, whatever. On this side, there's a bathroom and a bedroom wing out here and a kitchen on over here out of the picture. And there's two bedrooms on this side of the house as well. The roof is, again, a very simple truss system. And very interesting, at the ends of the gable ends, there's ventilators, which are screened. And they have these wood shutters on the inside. And the wood shutters are operated by this little rope and pulley system so that they can open and close. Oh, sorry. This is looking back towards the front entry. You'll notice the whole house, the floors are scored concrete. This is the door that goes into the kitchen. This door is a closet, and then the bathroom door is just beyond this map. The kitchen is quite intact from probably the 50s, I imagine. It could be the 30s, I'm not sure. Has a little stainless steel sink, sliding windows here, sliding windows here as well. And then you can see shelving. Cabinets are not original. The flooring is not original. And then on this side, a second sliding window, and then everything essentially hanging from the walls or on small shelves. Here's the door that goes to the bathroom. And the bathroom has a little foyer and a separate room for the toilet. This door here goes into a bedroom. And just beyond the toilet around the corner, there's a opening here, and then you have the shower and your sink. And there's a door that accesses the shower from the outside. Oops, sorry. The bedroom, this is the door that goes out to the foyer, to the bathroom area. It's a small little bedroom. It has jalousie windows up high, clear storage. This would have been from the after the tidal wave destruction. And there's a door here leading out to the back lanai. And here, a window looking out, a sliding window with three pane, horizontal panes. On the other side of the living room, you have this door, which again leads into the bedroom, and a second door, which also leads into another bedroom. Originally, this was one room, and it was made into two. I can't remember when, I think in the 80s. But I don't think it's a major change. Here you can see a five panel door with the original hardware, which leads into the bedroom. The bedroom also has clear story jalousie windows above and has actually a four horizontal pane casement window that opens in with fixed windows on either side. again, the whole house, you can see the structure of the house. It's very simple, single wall building, very much a beach cottage. Here's a closer view of that window. Then the second door, which was always there, leads into what is now a second or third bedroom, which is very minuscule and has room for a bed, essentially. As you can see, here's the partition wall they put in. If sometimes somebody wanted to remove it in the future, that'd be no problem at all. And here's a door that leads to the exterior. You can see how small the bedroom is. Here's the end of the bed. This door too is probably something that was resalvaged and used. It was originally a 5-panel door. Still have the bottom three. And then up here, there was a window which has been boarded in. Here's that door from the outside. In the living room, the window is facing out towards the ocean or sliders. Again, three horizontal panes. So they're probably from the 30s. And then the backyard of the house. Like I said, this was reconstructed in the 1950s. This wing was here before, but they extended the lanai out in the 1950 edition, but this whole wall had been destroyed by the tidal wave. Here you can see the lanai. It has the same scored concrete floor. The door is not original, the windows are. And then here's the view out towards the ocean. You have a naupaka hedge that separates the lawn from the beach and then the ocean beyond. So that's the property. Do you have any questions?
Don. Yeah, thanks, Don. Any questions for Don?
I have one. Don, during the, there has to be a public viewing place or time set up. How is that going to be handled with this particular
problem? Not the review board's concern, but I can answer that. They'll open the gate.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions for Don?
And is it still in the Dyer? Is it still in the Dyer family?
Oh yes, it still is.
Matt, you had a question?
Oh, just saying thanks. No questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then is anybody showing up to talk about 2470 Oahu? Don, can you stop sharing, please?
Yep. There we go.
Hi. Thanks. I'm here for Lorraine Minatoishi to talk about 24 Oahu Avenue.
Okay.
I'm just going to open my screen now to share, if that's okay. I'm so sorry, one moment, my computer is running a little slow. Okay. So the residence is the Fujioka residence. The TMK is 2905001. The main house is 2040 Oahu Avenue, and then they also have an adjacent property that's on the same TMK at 2313 Cooper Road, which is the cross section. It's a local residence, and we are nominating it under criteria A and C. There is, I believe, two buildings and one contributing building and one non-contributing, one structure for a total of two. The Fujioka residence was built in 1931. It's a one-story craftsman style bungalow with a rectangular plan and a hip roof. The roof is finished with asphalt shingle and the walls with Dolly Varden. It reflects the traditional style and the classical moldings and simple plan layout. The house is located in Manoa, and it's a single-family home with in the middle-class subdivision, with a tree-lined streets, grassy public front yards instead of concrete sidewalks. This is somewhat hilly area, is an early suburban development near the University of Hawaii Manoa campus. The house fronts Oahu Avenue with the garage closest to the street. Behind the garage is an open yard and a one-story house. At the rear end of the property is a two-story house that was constructed in 1953. The property is in excellent condition, and in the 1950s, the house was renovated to include a kitchen extension, adding a total of, I believe it was 48 square feet. In the 1960s, a third bedroom was added to the rear of the house, and adding, I'm not aware of the square feet that added. Efforts were taken to keep as much, but I'd be happy to get that information back to you. But efforts were taken to keep as much of the house historic material as possible to keep in accordance with the Secretary of Interior standard for the treatment of historic property. The site is a corner lot. It has 15,466 square feet total, measuring 81.4 feet across along Oahu Avenue and 190 feet deep along Cooper Road. The house faces southeast and fronts Oahu Avenue with the yard open to the street. The garage is the only structure to close off the yard, as well as some landscaping close to the street corner. A stone wall starts at the street corner and closes off the property to Cooper Road. The main pedestrian entry is through an open yard off Oahu Avenue with a concrete walkway paving the path to the house. The land slopes up slightly at the front of the yard but becomes more steep as you move towards the rear end of the property following an upward slope of Cooper Road. At the rear end of the property is a two-story house which was later built in 1953. The house was not built to be an extravagant display of wealth or stature as some of the other houses in the area were developed to be. It's significantly set back from the road and has a simple bungalow feel. The house is basically rectangular in plan with a front porch carved out of the front end of the rectangle. The house area totals 1,635 square feet of interior area. It has three bedrooms, two bathrooms, including one half bath, kitchen, living, dining, and front porch. The spaces are organized in a very straightforward manner upon entry from the front porch in the living room, which connects directly to the dining room. The private spaces are accessible through the hallway that comes off the kitchen behind the dining room at the rear of the house. There is a strict division of public and private spaces due to the hallway and its discreet entry. The private half of the dwelling houses of the hallway, three bedrooms and two bathrooms, including a half bath, which is located in the rear bedroom. The exterior walls are built with wood framing. The interior house reflects the traditional style and the classical moldings and simple plan layout. The house is elevated off the ground on wood post and pier. The porch piers along the front are slightly splayed, built of lava rock. Wood lattice painted its original green color spans between the foundation piers at the rear of the house. The bedroom addition displays a different kind of exterior sliding from the foundation support. The roof is wood frame, hip roofed, and deep overhanging eaves placed on the front and rear ends of the roof are two dormers, which are decorated with wood louvers, and the roof is sheathed with an asphalt shingle. The front facade is compositionally framed front by the splayed lava rock porch piers, with the center bayed flanked by the curving lava rock railings and the steps leading up the front porch. The railing that surrounds the front porch is also made of lava rock. Beyond the porch, the facade is divided into five asymmetrical bays. The fenestration of the double hung windows and the door are slightly off. The center bay of the main entry, which is off center relative to the exterior porch steps of the interior house. The left side elevation has three double hung windows and a bay window with double hung along the side, which view into the living room and dining room, respectively toward the rear end of the house. The kitchen extension has three jalousie windows, and the third bedroom addition has two double hung windows and a door that connects the rear deck to the bathroom. The addition of the bedroom at a later time is obvious from the side elevation views. The original roof does not extend to cover this addition. Instead, a shed roof with lower slope is attached from the original house to cover the bedroom. The sliding of the exterior walls is also different. The right side of the elevation, which is adjacent to Cooper Road, has two symmetrically placed glass jalousie windows for the living room, a bay window with double hung for one bedroom, another large glass jalousie window for the bedroom, a pair of double hung windows for the second bedroom, and another pair of double hung windows for the last bedroom. The right side of the houses the private spaces of the dwelling, so it is landscaped generously for privacy. The landscaping surrounding the house is also filled with rich histories, such as the jabong tree near the front porch. The back side of the house is very close to the second at the rear end of the property. Given the two houses' close proximity, the windows along the back side of the house were kept to a minimum, and a deck was built at the back, which is accessible from both the kitchen and the bedroom. A significant interior feature is the 10-foot high ceilings throughout, giving a spacious, open feeling. The living and dining rooms have coffered ceilings with prominent beams running in both directions. Interestingly, the beams are evenly spaced and symmetrical in the living room parallel to Oahu Avenue, but have significant discrepancies, resulting in an asymmetrical look parallel to Cooper Road. The door and the window trims and cases are also important decorative features. The window interior and the exterior casings are 5 inches wide. The original double hung windows were framed on the exterior side of the single wall structure, meaning that they overhang the exterior wall by 4 inches. The sills and other elements of the window frames are casing are made well. Modifications made over time was, the house was built in 1931 in a craftsman bungalow style. It was originally the only house on the property until a second house was constructed behind it in 1953. The following modifications were made over time to enlarge the house and renovate the interior spaces. The kitchen was extended towards the driveway in the 1950s, doing so allowed an exterior door to be placed, creating a second entry and allowing access to the rear deck. A third bedroom was added to the rear end of the house in 1960s, and the addition is obvious due to the differences in design and materials. The exterior siding is a little different, as well as the foundation. A new shed roof with a lower slope was installed instead of extending the existing roof. Upon site visit and analysis, the existing hallway seemed to have been open to the living room in the original design. Also, there may have been a wall between the living room and the dining room, according to indications on the walls and beams. Thus, the original design would have had a separate living room and dining spaces with opening into the hallway and living room. The current main double door does not appear to be from the original design. It is off center and it does not align with the interior space and ceiling pattern at all. Mr. and Mrs. Fujioka, the present owners, purchased the house in 2007. The house had not been well maintained for many years, and repair was critical to maintaining the integrity of its structure. Moreover, the owners desired to have more space as well as modern amenities, a larger kitchen, and it allowed for a private bedroom and bathroom where family that are visiting could stay. With the addition came changes from the roof that modified the original simple gable with small gabled entry portico to a full interesting gable form. The programmatic requirements of the rehabilitation included the following: modify the existing bedroom to function as a master bedroom suite with a walk-in closet, create an exterior deck for entertaining, enlarge the basement garage to allow for tandem parking and a wide stall with storage and a handicap accessible elevator to the main floor, remodel the master bedroom and master closet, new guest bedroom and new laundry space. The following will outline the changes made to the house and property and will show how these changes address the rules of preservation guidelines. Guideline 1 and 2, a property will be used as it was historically or be given a new use that requires minimal change to its distinctive materials, features, spaces, and spatial relationships. 2, the historic character of the property will be retained and preserved in the removal of distinctive materials or alteration of feature spaces in spatial relationships that characterize the property will be avoided. The solution we came up with was the original exterior materials such as the 4-inch drop siding with the rounded edges was rehabilitated or replaced in kind throughout the exterior. The double hung encasement windows were retained and reused on the front facade and west facade facing Ho'omaha Avenue. And the distinctive gable features were retained or rebuilt in kind. The distinctive wood lattice along the foundation and the exterior of color of the structure were also retained. On the interior, a very small kitchen at the rear corner of the house was removed and relocated to the rear addition. However, the spaces were rearranged and the historic character of the spaces were retained. Preservation guideline number 9, new additions, exterior alterations and related new construction will not destroy the historic materials, features, and spatial relationships that characterize this property. The new work shall be differentiated from the old and will be compatible with the historic materials, features, size, scale, and proportion, and massing to protect the integrity of the property and its environment. The solution was the rehabilitation project added on 1,208 square feet of interior space. The non-contributing rear addition was removed and rebuilt. The front of the house was also modified, and the front porch and its non-contributing lean-to roof overhangs were removed. And in its place, a deeper porch was created that extends two-thirds of the facade, and a bedroom was placed at the east side of the facade. These additions were done in keeping with the historic features, size, scale, and proportion to protect the integrity of the property. The central square form of the structure measuring 27 feet by 31 feet was kept intact, and its original interior dividing wall separating the public from the private spaces were also retained. The bedrooms and bathrooms still align along with the private hallway, and the original bay window in the master bathroom is intact. The rear addition is demarked by a case opening between the dining area and the elevator. The front addition did not intrude upon the original house's form as it extends out 12 feet from the facade. The original front entry door opening was kept intact. The integrity of the design materials and craftsmen of the 1926 period of significance has high integrity. The interior and the exterior modifications made in 2014 followed the type of materials and workmanship original to the structure. The house was in disrepair when the new owners took over the property. Just under $1 million was spent on improvements to the original structure. All of these improvements were done with careful considerations to its historic value. The immediate surroundings of the houses surrounding the property are still intact and not have been altered over the years. The neighborhood setting continues to be similar to that in the early 1920s era. We are considering it under criteria C. The property embodies the distinctive characters of a type, period, or method of construction, or represents the work of a master and possesses high artistic values or represents a significant and distinguishable entity because it still retains its original 1920 features. The original date of construction was in 1931, and the addition of the second house was in 1953. And under criteria A, the history of the, I do believe this is incorrect. Oh, I'm sorry.
Maybe you can summarize some of these things. We haven't seen the pictures of the house yet.
Oh, I can pull up some pictures. I'm so, well, can do. So the house is currently with all the, I'm trying to get back to, in kind to the Secretary of Interior standard. And then I will show photos now. Okay, here are some photos of the interior of the house. Here is the original door that is off-centered, showing the 10-foot high ceiling. When you enter the house, this is to the right of the entry. It's its original living area. And then actually, I think these. Okay, is it showing the floor plan for you?
No.
No, okay, I'm sorry.
We lost the shared, or you're not sharing your screen anymore.
Oh, okay. Okay, here is the floor plan showing with the renovations. The front elevation, and you can see on the right how the elevation has changed with the new addition back in 1953.
I'm sorry, if you could go back to the floor plan, could you just briefly summarize what's been added in 2014?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yes, I believe in 2014, bedroom 3 here was added, which is accessible to the lanai. And then also here, there was a wall that has been removed. And then also the two walk-in closets, this walk-in closet here was also added.
You said something about the porch being extended. Was that at this time?
I'm not familiar. I can get that answer for you if that's okay.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And then I know we have a few photos of the exterior as well.
I think the exterior is the major concern because that's what Shifty is concerned with. Yeah.
Okay, I'll pull those up.
So you're not sharing your screen anymore.
We are opening. But thank you. Thank you so much. It's good to know if it's showing. One moment. Here we are. Thank you, Ms. Stevens. So this is the exterior showing the walk up to the off-center door.
Is that from the street standing on the sidewalk, or is there a garage or something that's in front?
In front and to the left of it, there is a small garage. So this walk up is maybe 20 feet in from the sidewalk. But this view is viewable from the actual site. Well, there is not any sidewalks surrounding it. So from street view. This is the exterior front porch of the entrance if when you're standing at the entrance looking right. This is the reference for foot eave overhang that was kept in place. So from the last photo, that photo was taken here, and then this photo is taken from the very back perimeter of the property. This photo is taken in between the garage and to the right of the property. This is the siding of the house that was kept intact, I believe. This is showing the wood and pier platform that the house sits on, and then the historic jabong tree.
I think that previous one shows the addition on the back.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. I can see the difference in the material view. Is there any questions that maybe I can answer or forward to Lorraine for her review?
I was wondering why the garage is shown as a non-contributing element, because it was built in the 1960s. So it's over 50 years old and it does look quite original.
I'm not sure why they decided to not include the garage. I can be sure to get that answer to you. And if we have to make a revision to also include it, or if it should be included, we could do that.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So what it looks like from the exterior, there's been no observable change since the building was first constructed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, there's the rear addition.
The rear addition, yeah.
Yeah, on the back side, yeah.
Oh, yeah. From the street view, it's still the same from when it was originally constructed.
Actually, though the kitchen was, there was some work done in the 1950s, like the kitchen was pushed out a little bit further. But I think they did a good job of blending it in. Yeah, it says that it was the first modification she listed. The kitchen was extended towards the driveway in the 1950s.
Could you talk a little bit about the flooring throughout the house?
Yeah. My notes, so I'm sorry. I do apologize. I don't have any information regarding the flooring. If I can get that to you in email, if that's okay.
Actually, Nancy and I were able to see this house, and a lot of the house has carpet in it, which we assume there's wood flooring underneath. And I think in the hallway, it showed the original wood flooring, but some of the other rooms, they had put like a laminate, like a fake wood type flooring on top in some of the bedrooms and in the bathroom. So there was a couple spots where we could see the original wood flooring, but in most places it was covered up.
Yes.
Does anybody else have any questions for Angelica?
None for me, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Angelica.
Thank you so much for your time and allowing me to present the Fujioka residence.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay, you guys have any other questions or comments? And I guess that's the end of our program for today. And we'll see you guys all tomorrow. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye all.
Thanks. Bye.
All right.